This is Walt Bowman, and we are having a discussion of Shusaku Endo's book, Silence. Well, maybe one of the things that we ought to do right at the start is try to tell the story as quickly as we can for the benefit of the people who have not read it. I really don't know anything more about Shusaku Endo than that he is a Japanese Christian, a convert, and a Roman Catholic. I have been a little bit interested in Japanese theology since I have read two Japanese theologians. One is the author of The Theology of the Pain of God. I had his name in my head just a minute ago and I can't think of it right now. But this book, The Theology of the Pain of God, became a fairly influential book in Japanese theology. And it operated out of a passage of Jeremiah, the 31st chapter, where God speaks of having, of being in pain with his people. And wish I could think of his name again. The author of The Theology of the Pain of God says that's the heart of the gospel. The other Japanese theologian is Kosuke Koyama, who has written a little book called Water Buffalo Theology, among other things, and who, strongly influenced by The Theology of the Pain of God, has also asked about what he calls, or writes about what he calls, the crucified mind. The only way for Christians to look at the world, he says, is with a crucified mind. And that's finally what the whole theme of Water Buffalo Theology. Kosuke Koyama is probably the most influential East Asian theologian today and has worked for a long time in Thailand and other places. He is sort of a Japanese missionary to the East, but a quite different sort than those who went tramping through in the Second World War to create, or try to create, the greater East Asia co-prosperity sphere. Well, these themes in Japanese theology are both from Protestant theologians, whereas here we have a Catholic theologian now writing a novel. And let me just try to describe briefly. The novel is set in the 17th century in Japan, within 100 years after Francis Xavier had first brought Christianity to Japan in 1549. And come on in, we're just getting started.
Yes. Just upon one, go around, there's another one to your left.
Thanks. We have a couple of chairs just waiting for people to sit in them. So sit. The story is set in the 1630s in Japan, and the rumor has come to Portugal that a famous Portuguese Jesuit, theologian and missionary by the name of Cristovão Ferreira, F-E-R-R-E-I-R-A, Ferreira, I guess that's how you would pronounce it, has become an apostate, has renounced the faith. Three of his students, in total disbelief, since they had learned all their theology from him, had been deeply influenced by him, three of his students do not believe this, and so they seek permission to go to Japan and ferret out the truth about their teacher. Many delays, a lot of people are very reluctant to let them go, but eventually they make their way to Macau, and there the story begins. And it is told in the form, first of all, of four letters of one of these students, Sebastian Rodriguez, who is the main character of the novel. And in his letters he writes about the great difficulties that they at first experienced in getting to from Macau to Japan. But eventually, with the help of a drunken Japanese, Kichijiro, who turns out to be the the second main character of the book, they get on a ship and they eventually land in an island. And there, astonishingly, they find Christians. But they are hidden up in the in a village.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that this was supposed to have read the book before you came in that. I should have made that announcement different.
They find a Christian village, and or at least many Christians in a village, and these Christians hide. Two of the priests eventually make it, Father Garpe and the main character, Rodriguez, and they are hidden up in a hut, and people come up to them. They discover a kind of primitive lay organization for a church without priests, a leader called the Jii-sama, and who is an older man, like an elder almost, and then catechists who do the teaching of the Jii-sama does the baptizing, and the Tosama are a group of catechists then who instruct. The two, besides the Jii-sama, there are three main people who come to expression: Mochiki and Ichizu, who looks perpetually angry but who really isn't, and then Mochiki's sister, Otsuma. And in the four letters, Rodriguez writes about how they begin to care for these Christians now in this village, and then he goes on. He is led by Kichijiro, or somehow or other Kichijiro accompanies him to another village, and so he has a couple of places where he is doing the work of a priest. Many, many comments along the way that one would want to make, but I think we just should stick to the main outlines of the story. In the end, Rodriguez must observe, as the persecution of the Japanese Christians catches up with the village, and because there were priests in the village, Ochiki and Ichizu, together with the Jii-sama, are eventually, and Kirijiro, are eventually taken as hostages. When they are asked to renounce Christianity, Kichijiro does once again. I mean, he has renounced it many times, and he tramples on the fumie once again. The fumie becomes kind of crucial to the whole story because it's the form that the Japanese use to secure apostates. It's a picture or a medallion of the Virgin and the Christ Child affixed to a piece of wood, which is then put in the ground, and you step on it. So Kichijiro steps on it, and the others do too. Rodriguez finds himself giving advice to them as they are about to leave, and they say, "What shall we do if they put the fumie in front of us?" And he says, "Step on it, trample on it." So they do. But the magistrate who is conducting the investigation is not satisfied with that. He says, "Spit on it and call the Virgin a whore." And Kichijiro can manage this, but the other two cannot, which is exactly what the magistrate had suspected. And so they confess that they are Christians. Rodriguez is then forced to watch as they are both put to death. And the way they are put to death is they are tied to crosses in the tide, and so the tide comes in just up to their chins, buffeting them, and in two or three days of this kind of buffeting, they eventually die. and he, Rodriguez, must watch this and cannot do anything about it. In the end, Kichijiro comes back. They have a little, for a while, Kichijiro is ahead of Rodriguez in a journey, and then they catch up with each other, and then they journey together. And the first part of the novel ends with Rodriguez's capture. He is captured by the man whom everyone had warned him against, Inoue, who was portrayed, what?
Inoue. E is always pronounced A in Japanese.
Inoue. All right, that would be the name.
Inoue.
All right, that's...
Ends in an E.
Right, Inoue. Mm-hmm. Who is the most feared of all of the interpreters or all of the interrogators and magistrates. There is the story of his journey, of his being helped by some simple Japanese Christians, especially a woman who feeds him with cucumber. But finally he is brought to a prison outside of Nagasaki. And there, after some time, the interrogation begins. And it's very gentle. It's just like a conversation. Nothing much is happening. Philosophical arguments over whether Christianity really could take root in Japan or not. And finally, Rodriguez, who says he will not recant, they should put him to death, that Inoue would punish him, learns to his astonishment that the gentleman, the old man with whom he's been having all these conversations, is Inoue, who is not doing anything evil at all. In the course then of his imprisonment, the Christians who are imprisoned with him, he's allowed to say prayers with them, to visit with them, talk with them all the time. But finally, one of them is executed, and the other three are taken to the edge of the sea at Nagasaki, and there with Garpe, his father Garpe, his companion, who was captured too. These three Christians are bound in mats, and Garpe is given the opportunity to become an apostate in order to save these Christians. And Rodriguez watches all of this at some distance and finally yells, apostatize, apostatize, save them. But Garpe does not. The three are taken out in boats, rolled into these mats, dumped into the waves, and Garpe rushes out after them but cannot save them. Rodriguez watches all of this at a distance and then just sits there. Finally, they bring... after days of this, sitting there and reflecting on all of this, they bring Ferreira to meet him. And Ferreira says, I did renounce. I am no longer Ferreira. I am Suano. I have taken an executed Christian's wife, and I'm writing a book on astronomy. I'm not useless, really. And then the interpreter says, but he's also writing a book against Christianity. And then Ferrier confesses, yes, he is writing a book against Christianity. And he says Christianity can't take root in Japan. It's just that the Japanese don't believe in God. They don't have any room in their whole culture for a transcendent God. And the discussion sort of ends at that point. Sebastian Rodriguez is then put into a small room in the prison where he can see nothing, but where after a while he hears what he thinks is snoring. And he's very irritated that while he is anticipating his own death, a guard can be simply snoring in total indifference to what is going on. At one point he discovers that sin is not theft or lies, but for one man to walk brutally over the life of another and be oblivious to the wounds that he has left behind. And he thinks of this all now as he listens to this snoring. And so finally he is so irritated by it that he yells out, "Could they at least please stop the snoring?" And then the interpreter says, "Oh my, come quickly." And Ferriera comes, and they say, "You think that's snoring? It's not at all. It is Japanese Christians being tortured in the pit. They have already become apostates, but the pit is that they are hung by their feet over a pit full of excrement and are not allowed to die easily, but have punctures put in the back behind their ears, the back of their head, so that the blood is able to not to collect in their heads, but to drain out. And it's a brutal, brutal torture. And they are moaning. That's what he thought the snoring was. How can they be saved? Only, says Ferriera, if he will become an apostate. And then he says the crucial words, Christ would have become an apostate for you, for these people, if he had been here. I have to introduce one third thing now. Throughout, two themes run through the book. One is that Rodriguez continually meditates on the face of Christ. It is usually a beautiful face, always a strong face, full of God's majesty and glory. At the very beginning of the book, Rodriguez says, "Honor and glory and power belong to God alone," in his first letter. And this face mirrors that. But it is a silent face. And the other theme that runs through the book is the silence of God, the indifference of God. And the image that Endo uses for this is the sea. People die in the sea, and nothing, no trace is left, and the sea is just simply indifferent. And he has this terrible sense of the silence of God. Now, finally, as he decides, and is led actually by Ferriera to the fumie, and looks into it, at last the face of Christ seems to him not like this glorious face, this beautiful face, but the face that has been trampled on by dirty feet, by bloody feet, a face worn away by people who, a face worn away by people who have often stepped on it, and this face talks to him in the crucial lines of the book. I have to find that page. The face says, "Trample, trample. I more than anyone know of the pain in your foot. Trample. It was to be trampled on by men that I was born into this world. It was to share men's pain that I carried my cross." So he becomes an apostate, and immediately these Christians are delivered from their torture. He himself now, at last, by the magistrate, is given a new name, Okada, and he must the name of a Christian who has been executed, and he must take also this Christian's wife. And in the midst of it all, now Kichijiro comes into the scene once more in a very dramatic episode, and he asks for absolution, but Rodriguez is no longer a priest. He can't give absolution. He is an apostate, and he must, he has betrayed his priestly vocation. And besides, Kichijiro is the Judas throughout the book, who has betrayed him, betrayed villages, betrayed everybody. And throughout the book, he has always asked, "What about this Judas? All the explanations as to how Christ could let Judas commit suicide and be cast into oblivion had always bothered him. And none of the answers were satisfactory. Now, as Kichijiro comes to him and asks for absolution, the face of Christ speaks to him once more. Lord, I resented your silence. But, says the face, I was not silent. I suffered beside you. But you told Judas to go away. What thou dost, do quickly. What happened to Judas? Rodriguez asks. The Christ replies, I did not say that. Just as I told you to step on the plaque, so I told Judas to do what he was going to do. For Judas was in anguish, as you are now. And with that, he was able to give Kichijiro absolution, knowing that even if he was betraying his fellow priests, who would condemn his act as sacrilege, he was not betraying his Lord. And then in an appendix, there is just simply official reference to this House of the Christian, where Rodriguez lived then 30 more years, and dies, and his corpse, the corpse of San Amon, was buried in Murion Temple. The posthumous Buddhist name of San Amon is Mayusen Joshin Shinshi, paid 100 ryo and 2 bu for the funeral service and 100 biki as the cremation charge. And the novel ends there, with just leaving you, in a sense, with the story. Well, do you want to add anything, those of you who have read it, any details that seem significant to you? Maybe we can begin talking about it at this point. How do you respond to this, that Christ speaks to the apostate, or the priest about to become an apostate, and says, trample, that's why I came, and this interpretation of Judas, in a sense, giving Judas permission for the betrayal and not as an act of condemnation. How do you react to something like that? What does that do to your image of Jesus?
What I came away from with after reading the book was the terrible sense of hell and suffering that Rodriguez was going through because of what he did. I mean, that was the strongest thing that I felt after I read it, that he suffered so as his Lord suffered, by, in a sense,
it was depressing because after the betrayal, you're saying, Rodriguez,
30 years, and lived there and assume this other kind of identity, even writing for the official dumb or whatever. I forget. It's been a while since I read it, but that all that time, I think he must have just suffered terribly.
But we are not told that. Endo does not tell us that. The last words of he has to write a book condemning Christianity. But the last words of Rodriguez's feeling before that appendix are these: Kichijiro wept softly, and then he left the house. The priest had administered that sacrament that only the priest can administer. No doubt his fellow priests would condemn his act as sacrilege, but even if he was betraying them, he was not betraying his Lord. He loved him now in a different way than before. Everything that had taken place until now had been necessary to bring him to this love. Even now, I am the last priest in this land, but our Lord was not silent. Even if he had been silent, my life until this day would have spoken of him. That's where Rodriguez's reflections end. And then the appendix talks about those 30 years, but...
But Kichijiro's suffering, or I mean everybody thinking from a human standpoint, how, what a rotten person he was to have betrayed Christ and become an apostate, to ask for absolution at the end and receive it, I guess I just assumed that Rodriguez then was going to be feeling that same agony. I mean, knowing that people were going to assume the same as they did about Kichijiro, or whatever his name was. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, your reaction to this is sympathy for...
Well, I just
Rodriguez.
Felt like he became a suffering servant in a way that he had, I mean, his life was just horrendous all the way through, and even at the end, he still, I thought, was going to be suffering, but maybe you're right, maybe he...
Well, he does not get a lot of things in here. He does not get the glorious martyrdom that he was looking for. And in fact, and in a lot of comments along the way, when he observes martyrdom, it is meaningless. It is not glorious. The Christians who, Mokichi and Ichizu, who are killed there on the lake, nothing is left again, but the sea just sort of washing endlessly on the shore. And then this woman who befriends him and the other two Christians with her are just dumped overboard in these mats and they drown. And the last thing he remembers is Garpi's head floating momentarily above the waves and then disappearing, and nothing. The sea is left and God is silent. And he reflects on this, that all the martyrdoms that he has experienced are really not the glorious martyrdoms that he had imagined, but meaningless ones. And in the end, Endo has his own death. Just after 30 years, he dies. And it's in an official's report. No martyrdom, just an appendix. And it's so official. You just have to read it to see, how, in a sense, how chilling it all is. So that's certainly, I suppose, one of the themes. He does not get the martyrdom that he had looked for. And the martyrdoms that he sees are not particularly ennobling at all. They are just sort of cruddy. Yeah, go ahead.
A couple times throughout the novel, at the end, when the interpreter and Ferrero was talking to Rodriguez, they talked how Christianity in Japan was just merely they weren't really embodying the Christian faith. It was just their own Buddhist background adjusted to
they were taking over Christianity,
and they thought of the sun as the physical sun. And I was wondering how that might relate to Rodriguez's eventually his old viewpoint of what his Christianity meant to him. And then as he went through this thing where he eventually came to apostatize, he also thought in that term that the framework was... And Ferreira did the same thing. He went through this where he changed his viewpoint. Or, I don't know how it relates, but there's... there might be a connection.
It's a very chastened view of Christianity in a couple of respects. I mean, in effect, he's arguing that there are certain cultures which are not amenable to Christianity, but on a broader scale, it seems to me he's saying that Christianity is not at all this triumphalistic kind of notion that I think most of us in the West have imbibed, that at the end, everything will come together in some glorious vision. I mean, there's no glory at all. Not only the martyrdoms aren't glorious, but there's no, there's just no glory in Christianity.
Period.
Right, and it's a very strong statement of the theology of the cross. I mean, what's real to Christianity is suffering and death. And you don't get a resurrection. At least, it's not at all comes through the story. And so, for me, it was a very chastened look at some of our assumptions about what Christianity is about. Because for such, for the Japanese Christians, those that did buy it, it really meant not a better life, but by far a worse life. And those that were willing to live with that would probably end up being killed.
I was wondering how that idea of the, you know, the Japanese not fitting into that culture would relate. Rodriguez brought up the question, well, how could they be such martyrs if they didn't really have a belief in something?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what kind of an answer was given to that question? Mm-hmm. How could they be martyrs? The answer, it seems to me, in the book was that a paradise had been painted for them. And so they went, in fact, he quotes this hymn that they sing often, "We are going to paradise, we are going to paradise," and how much better that would be than the taxes and the oppression. Rodriguez was impressed by the incredible poverty of the peasants, first of all, and so Christianity promised them a little bit something better after they died, and that's... but at one point when Inouye is arguing with him, at one point when one of the people asks, "Aren't we going to something better?" Sebastian wants to cry out, "But you don't really understand what Christianity is all about." And then he doesn't anyway. He says, "Let them go with whatever visions they have." But... it seems to me, though, that Endo is trying to say is not so much that Christianity is unrelieved suffering and death, but that Christianity really embodies, as its vision, the giving up of one's most cherished dreams for the sake of others. The giving up of one's most cherished dreams for the sake of others. And Rodriguez's most cherished dream had been to become a martyr. And that was the thing that he had to give up then for the sake, finally, of Japanese who could only be saved by his giving up his most cherished dreams. And now, in a sense, what Endo is saying is that if one penetrates to the heart of the Christ character, Jesus as the Christ, it would be that he too sacrifices himself for others. If that's what Christianity is about, then Rodriguez has gone the best route by renouncing Christ for the sake of the Japanese. That's the paradox.
Yeah. Well, the whole silence theme of giving up the answers that we want and... I mean, I really like what you said about giving up cherished dreams, but it just made me think too that the whole time that God is silent and how often we want answers to our questions and want them now and don't understand. And I think there's something to give up there too, that we live with questions in God's silence.
Mm-hmm. And the giving up itself is not virtuous either. I mean,
that's right. It is.
So you have to give it up, and yet you can't even choose to give it up.
And in the end, Ferreira and Rodriguez can't stand each other. He has a telling line in here where they have contempt for each other. They are now living in the same house, or they meet once a month. Mm-hmm. Both of them felt hatred and contempt for one another.
You know, well, the other thing, it doesn't really have to do with the book, but we have a woman up here for a year who had been a missionary in Japan for 12 years, and in all that time she could count four people who had become Christians. One of them committed suicide, the other went back to her former religion. So she said, really, in 12 years, there were two people that she could say embraced Christianity. And I just felt that all the way through here, you know, what are we doing in Japan? It's just a horrible feeling.
We're teaching them English.
Well, and her whole idea of our need for a savior, she said they didn't feel guilt. You had to knock them down and say you are really guilty in order to say you need a savior. And on the other hand, they felt great, they needed to save face. They felt great shame, and that was kind of how at least she and her husband approached the gospel message to these people. But I, again, as I read it, I just felt like, is there a better field to be preaching the gospel?
One of the problems is that they have such a group orientation, whereas Christianity is an individual thing. You know, we don't say, well, shall we become Christians? No, I decide for me. And that's where the saving face comes in. You shame your group, and that's what you don't want to do. That's where the control is. It's a lower moral value, a lower moral development level, because it's...
I'm struck, though, by, you know, just the whole, like, the failure of our heritage to have anything to say. I mean, we have a hard time communicating to another culture, or Rodriguez and Ferrer, their understanding was hard to apply. They could not do what was needed to change their own understanding to understand where the Japanese people were.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it took to the point where they had to give up. Well, Ferreira and Rodriguez had to give up their own
version, yes,
to have any impact whatsoever on to make a difference, you know, to ease any suffering at all. It's so out of their control.
In the end, I don't think Endo is really saying Japanese can't become Christians. I think what he's saying is that the kind of Christianity which will call Japanese to the faith is not the Christianity of Western imperialism. One of the interesting sub-themes in here is the role of Portuguese imperialism in the persecutions. The reason Inouye says this, he says, I'm not against you because I think Christianity is an evil religion. I just think you've come to us like an ugly woman who loves inordinately. And I think that what that is saying, I don't want to put an interpretation on it as a final word, but I think what that is saying is that what the Japanese learned was the way in which the Portuguese and the Spanish and the Dutch and the English had used Christianity as a way of insinuating themselves into countries only to take them over. And the more reports they got of this in Japan, the more they were determined to stamp out Christianity. Endo's point may well be that a different kind of Christianity can evoke, if not an overwhelming response in Japan, then at least Japanese Christianity. And I think that's borne out by the two theologians that I mentioned right at the beginning, and I thought of the first one. Kazuo Kitamori wrote Theology of the Pain of God. Both Kitamori and Koyama, the two Japanese theologians that I know about, I know a couple of others, but their main theme is the crucified mind in Koyama and the pain of God in Kitamori, which is a different version of Christianity altogether, I think, than the one that we have, the triumphal version that we have proclaimed in America and in the West, in Western culture generally. I want to sort of toss one other thing into the hopper here. Douglas Hall, in an essay on this, says that we really cannot operate very well with a humiliated Christ. Even our portrayals of Christ's crucifixion have a note about them which does not ring true, which is not expressive of the true humiliation. And a couple of things dawned on me as I was reading Galatians, that the phrase "born of a woman, born under the law" may well be a statement of humiliation, that to be born of a woman was inescapable, of course, but it but even the two genealogies in Matthew and Luke can't end up being genealogies of Mary. That just isn't the way one enters into the world. You aren't ever a woman's son in that culture. You are a man's son. And so the genealogies end up with Joseph, although according to the stories that both Matthew and Luke tell, Joseph is irrelevant. So one misses all over the place some aspects of what it meant for Jesus to be the Christ. By contrast, Ernest Becker, in one of his essays, An Angel in Armor, which is also on sale in the bookstore, and you want to get a commercial in here, Mary, in his essay on the generational conflict, Kafka and the Oedipus Complex, led me to think something fairly shocking about the atonement, and that is that if the New Testament is to be believed, the Father-Son language in the Gospels is really language, once again, of the generational conflict in which Jesus ends up feeling and experiencing betrayal by the Father. Why have you abandoned me to this? Why are you doing this to me? Is the last recorded word in the Gospel of Mark. And yet that is the way the New Testament portrays the redemption as taking place. So it isn't as if what we negotiate imperfectly, our generational conflicts, God somehow brings off in a perfect way. It's that having entered into the generational relationship, Jesus and the Father bring it off as badly as we do, with the Father doing it to the Son, and the Son shrieking out finally in agony against the Father. And that's where the story ends, except for Mark's incident of the empty tomb. In a way, it says, and Becker makes one other point later on, he says it's our idols who have to be perfect. It may well be God in his reality who is as imperfect and as humiliated as we are. Which really puts the final coffin nail into the triumphalist pictures of redemption that we have often carried around with us.
Well,
go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you
want to go? Oh, okay. Well, it seems to me one thing about Western Christianity is the sense that we need to be correct in our belief. In our intellectual understanding of the gospel, and I have a sense
from Eastern thought that that isn't the important thing, that we argue with other people over matters of intellectual belief, where it sounds like from the book there's a sense of that isn't the issue. The issue is sacrifice, or the issue is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Where our issue is, and even in the book, it sounds like they were fighting over the pictures on the floor where the Virgin Mary and the details of Christianity. The Eastern way of understanding is the suffering, or just throwing that intellectual correctness out.
The Japanese are certainly worried about being correct. They have 90 ways to say you, and you've got to pick out the right one, and you're in trouble.
But is it important? Is intellectual belief important, and is it important? Or is it more what you do?
Maybe belief is carried out by what you do. I'm thinking of something like tea ceremony or kimono or something. There's a specific way it has to be done. I went to the tea ceremony and I thought, why does this take so long to learn? You kneel down, you go through these little formal things. They showed us how to wash our hands and exactly how to do it, but maybe we weren't moving exactly right. They spend years learning how to learn a tea ceremony, and it looks like something to learn in 20 minutes. But the more you learn about it, the more you realize it's very, very defined and very correct, and each school of tea ceremony has its own way of doing it, and correct, just down to the tea, thought of the eye. I don't know about intellectual correctness, but it seems like that.
Yeah, in that sense, what you're saying is that if we have, if our fetish or our idol is intellectual correctness, maybe theirs is ceremonial correctness, and the kind of thing that Endo is advocating here is that maybe it's the capacity to sacrifice cherished dreams again, whatever the correctnesses are, for the sake of the other, that finally is what the event of Christ is about, and that's what it means to believe in Him. I don't know. I don't know where this takes us. Maybe that's why one has a discussion of this. Is it conceivable for us to give up cherished notions, intellectual notions in this case? I don't want to say what the Japanese have to do. I mean, that's their business. But for us, at least, to give up our intellectual or our moral idols, our cherished dreams, for the sake of the other. I ask that question, among other things, as a theologian, because I'm so sure I'm right most of the time. Even when I'm wrong, I know I'm right. I haven't ever been wrong. I'm trying to think of which 90 tapes here at Holden Village I would like to have scratched from the list of tapes that you advertise, and I can't think of a one. They're all perfect. What are you going to do? So would I give any of that up for any of you? I don't know. I haven't been put to that kind of a test yet.
What was the C.S. Lewis novel where people went on a bus to heaven?
Great Divorce. Yeah.
Sort of say that they had been wrong and admit all of it.
Would the moral majority give up their morality for the sake of somebody else? I don't know. Anita Bryant managed finally. Paul, do you want to?
I haven't read the book, and I also don't know anything about the two Japanese theologians.
Yeah, I really got you there. One up all the way.
If I may ask a question from the outside.
Yes, you may.
What's the name of the man who wrote the famous God?
Kitamori.
Kitamori. What does he do with the resurrection?
Well, I don't.
know what most Christians, well, I shouldn't say that.
Did he give it up?
No. I think he understands the resurrection the way I think Mark does, as an affirmation of the cross as the way to go. But the cross is giving up your dream, maybe. Paul Tillich's phrase for that is that Jesus sacrifices himself to the Christ. You wanted to say something. Yes.
There seems to be a little parallel here to Buddhism, especially in the Zen Buddhist tradition, where you have a criticism of hanging on to any kind of intellectual idea. The Zen Buddhist is, in some traditions, even tramples on his own scriptures. So maybe there's a parallel there, on the other hand, it isn't so clear, I suppose, in that tradition that all of that is to come by compassion for others. So that's there, too, but I don't know if the connection is made quite as explicitly as it is so far. I'm wondering if he has any kind of idea of that relating to that culture.
I don't know enough. I don't know what he came from. I don't know how recent a convert he is to Christianity. I wish I knew more.
I haven't read the book either. I mean, he talked about death, the way of death. Well, in one sense, you know, in the tradition, what's the difference between life and death? Mm-hmm. So you don't make death a big event which signifies the past.
I don't recall that there's a whole lot of emphasis in here on Christianity's compassion for others either. I mean,
when they tried to talk him into becoming an apostate, they emphasized that.
Yeah, but in terms of kind of the normal day-to-day living in Christianity, there's not much emphasis on serving others. And so it's a more subdued.
At one telling point, he says, Rodriguez keeps asking himself, what have I brought these Japanese Christians except more trouble, more pain, more suffering? Look what they do for me. Like they gave him a hut, he says, they cared for him. And then this woman, and when they're in prison together, she takes out a cucumber and gives it to him. And that's the only food he has. And then at that point, he says, What have I brought all these Christians, and what can I give them except my life and my death? And in some of the arguments then, and some of the discussions, the theme of compassion and sacrifice is brought out.
I think in terms of the villages, the life with each other, there's not much emphasis on
no.
They're living on behalf of anybody else.
No, there's certainly none of that. But the Christianity is portrayed almost exclusively in terms of mass and the prayers and confession and getting absolution. Go ahead.
I was thinking about this when I was reading it, that he had a feeling that, like, the priests are working through this whole framework of their religion, that if there was a big division between that and actually living, applying that to the situation in which they were, the same kind of thing that, the Mass says that all this pain and suffering of the, he didn't apply himself to any of the pain and suffering of the villagers until he was, until he realized that the only way to help them would be to apostatize.
He often asked himself, would I do this if I weren't a priest, if it weren't my priestly duty, if I was just another one of them, if I was just another Japanese or another human being, if I weren't a priest and didn't have that image to live up to, would I be then? Yeah. You would want to say something.
Well, I was just going to say, when you talk about us meeting in the Western society, we think that image of Jesus. And Will Hertzfeld said that when he was here earlier in the summer, that you're forgetting the experience of Black America when we see the rest of the world. What about the image of the Black guy? And I was struck by a lot of similarities to their, I mean, in the South, weren't a lot of the same sort of otherworldly, paradise? I mean, isn't that what Christ and Christianity was about for Black America during the slave days? What is the image of Christ for Black people? And do we have anything to look at there rather than the starting? Isn't that what Douglas John Hall says, that we sort of have to look to other cultures instead of to our own? Mm-hmm. And Will Hertzfeld was saying maybe there's something within our own culture that we need to look at.
If that can be regarded as within our culture. I thought you were going to say there, right? Yeah. Our culture, we have another culture that we can look to.
The Japanese always see our culture as California. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't want to go to Disneyland. We're waiting on the Tokyo airport, and all these people are coming in with their Mickey Mouse ears and their Donald Duck tokens. That's the biggie. You come over here, you got to see San Francisco and Disneyland, and you can go home again.
Right.
So when you're talking really about compassion and having a sense of community, it seems to me that the peasants in the villages have an amazing sense of community to hide the priests and to risk their lives, and to, I mean, they really did have a sense of community in that sense.
But it was direct because the priest.
Well,
I mean,
they really literally risked their lives to provide food and housing, and did it as a group effort. I mean, it wasn't just one person in the building. So, but that surely is not a strong community.
Well, I guess I have a sense that was down to the ceremonial leader who was providing the ceremony, the ritual by which their faith was kept alive. But it was really at a level that was not tied in with how they dealt with each other. I may be wrong, but that's my sense of that. Because the priest really did not enter into the life of the village at all, because he had to hide away. And the only time he kind of touched was through the mass and the ceremonial function.
Do you think that any difference from how it's been in our culture?
Yeah, one of the things that bothered me throughout first part of the novel, at least, was the way they cared for the priest, and I have often thought of how protective parishes are of their clergy, you know, as if the whole point is, well, here we've got a few holy people around that we have to guard and cultivate and protect, the rest of us can't achieve that level of holiness, but if these guys can, well, we've got to sort of take care of them. And I caught just big swatches of that in the letters that Rodriguez sends back from the beginning. Our time is nearly up. It's almost an hour that we've been at this, and we haven't come to any kind of conclusion, which bothers my cherished dream of tying everything up neatly. But I would like to ask, are any of you moved to read this book who have not read it? You don't have to confess. I mean, I don't want to see hands, but I think that maybe at least something has been accomplished. If you want to,
I'll introduce this tiny bit. I read this book a long time ago, and I heard it discussed by Japanese this summer, and briefly what they said is that Endo Liu, who was raised in the French Christian Church, is trying to flush that all away and saying that Western Church is not Jesus Christ. And if Japan ever got a hold of Christianity, that kind of church would go down in the swamp. And what would come out of the swamp is the kind of Christianity that the Western world would never recognize. Mm-hmm.
Well, giving up the church, I just want to emphasize some of these things before, somebody did it. Our church, our idea of what Easter is all about, I think it's so strong in the fact that Easter does affirm suffering, love, and defining. And I think most American churches have to get rid of what they think Easter is.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that book again and again, that Friday is the Easter and suffering, love.
He's almost the most popular novelist in in Japan, and it's all over. He has writers who kind of looked out in England, let alone the version down in England. And that is great, because they know it's Christian.
Yeah, and less than 1% of the population is Christian now. In fact, a lot of their popular novels are Christian.
Well, I've read the book twice, and I have found it to be an incredibly rich book, first of all. It's just, I'm starting to cross-reference it now, because themes just keep weaving in and out, and once you've read the whole book, then you just want to go back and you see things in the first pages that you never saw before. It's just really, in that sense, it's a very incredible statement, but it will not leave you very settled and very comfortable. And your initial response, Mary, was, oh, that poor man, maybe that's where you're going to end up in the evening. Well, the bell will ring. We didn't even get to all of the themes, but thank you for joining in this discussion today.
Thank you.